And good morning. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. I'm Susie Press.
And I'm your co-host, Susie, Chris Bessler.
It's nice to see you this morning, Chris, on this beautiful Tuesday, April 21st morning show. We have a lot lined up. We have Sage Dixon here in the studio. He's the State Representative, District 1B, a new legislator. Welcome, Sage.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And you're fresh back from Boise?
Yes. A week back in Bonner County.
Yeah.
And before we get to an exciting interview, find out what's going on there in the legislature, let's hear about the weather. Currently, it's 43 degrees. This is from the National Weather Service. And let's see, I got to scroll this down. The high today, oh my goodness, sunny, 72 degrees. Mm-hmm. Tonight, a little cloudy. It says increasing clouds, low 39. Tomorrow, chance of rain 30%, and tomorrow night 30%. With a high tomorrow of 61 and low of 34. What else can you say about that?
Well, that sounds pretty good today anyways. It's like perfect, 72 degrees.
Time to get out on the bikes and hiking trails and things like that.
We had sunrise this morning at 5:45 a.m. and sunset will be at 7:45 p.m. And that means that in the last week, we've gained 23 minutes of daylight as we get closer to the summer solstice. The moon is, I've got a little skinny crescent moon there. It's 12% full. We'll hit the first quarter moon on Saturday. The moonrise, actually, you could look up if it was dark enough and see it because it came up at 7:58 a.m. But it stays up really long when it's in the new moon phase. So it'll be up tonight, so it should be visible.
Last night, there was just this beautiful crescent just as the sun was
just
setting.
Just a sliver, yeah, pretty cool. The lake level is at 2053.9, and it is going to start filling. It's projected to rise about a foot this week. And on our rivers, the Priest River is running at 2470 cubic feet per second. That's actually down from about 3,000 CFS last week. The Moye River is at 1,000 CFS, and it's been holding pretty steady there for about the past week. So that's actually a low runoff for this time of year. It's reflecting the fact that we have a smaller snowpack up in our mountains. And that's been a concern with filling the lake, actually. They're going to start filling the lake a little earlier this year, I believe, because of concerns they're not going to have as large of a snowpack.
So they do that by closing the dam at Albany Falls?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they start restricting the water flow out of the lake. Yeah. And other things going on around town. Susie, what's been happening?
Oh, my goodness. There's so much music. This is a town full of musicians. And just so you know, I'll just mention right now, I might mention it again. Tonight, I'll be interviewing Justin Landtrip. He will be the featured guest on Live at the Office this Thursday night at the Sandpoint Reader. And so that's at 8 o'clock tonight. You can hear some live music here. It's kind of a preview of the concert coming up.
Yeah, and there's other great things going on in this town, in town this week. The annual K&K Fishing Derby kicks off this weekend.
That's right.
And the annual festival at Sandpoint Art Auction is happening on Friday.
And I think the Waldorf School has an auction this weekend, too.
Okay. Well, and there's a ton going on. Hopefully, we'll have some time towards the end of the show to go over the community calendar. News-wise, some sad news. A Coeur d'Alene man and a Lewiston woman were killed on Sunday at the Bernard Overlook over Lake Ponderay. That's the south end of the lake, when their ATV went over an embankment, over a cliff, actually, and it plunged down 500 feet. That's a sad tragedy. Also, our state Senator Sean Keel was honored on the final night of the legislative session for becoming the longest-serving female senator in the history of the state. That's... Were you there for that?
No, I wasn't. Ceremony? I heard about that when I got back.
Was that in the Senate?
It's just in the Senate, right.
Okay. So that's kind of a marked distinction for Sean.
Congratulations, Sean Keough.
And I also heard that she was the longest serving state senator for District 1.
Correct. I read that also. Yeah.
So she's something. See, longevity gets you awards.
At least a flag.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, it could help us all. Yeah, of course, there's been other things going on around town, but
we'll get to all that. We're going to do the community calendar towards the end of the show. But I want to also mention I've got all these great songs queued up for eventually this morning.
Okay.
Because tomorrow is the 45th anniversary of Earth Day.
Earth Day, okay. Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking
We have Earth Day-oriented songs you want to play?
I do.
Okay.
So Good Planets Are Hard to Find is one of them by Steve Forbert. So we'll get to that, but...
In our solar system, it's really tough to find a good planet, I think. So
not a lot of choice.
Yeah. Right. So we're in the studio this morning with our featured guest. It's Sage Dixon. He's the District 1 at House of Representatives.
Right.
Legislator. And Sage, I thank you for being here.
Sure. Happy to be here, Chris.
And I thought since you're brand new, you were just elected last November, that I'd like to hear about your experiences as a new legislator going to Boise. How did you find it?
It was very different than my life normally is up here in Bonner County. It's a lot more work than you would anticipate. I think a lot of times we have the conception of going down there and just sitting in the big room in that House chambers or the Senate chambers and twiddling your thumbs and waiting for things to get done. But there's an immense amount of work that does go into it. And sometimes it's just communication, the amount of emails that you get and letters that come into your inbox and responding to those, and then having to go over all the bills, the plethora of proposed legislation that comes through. Excuse me, I'm trying to get up to speed on what you're going to be voting on. And that's something that I found most difficult, is sitting in a committee the first day and being expected to vote on something that I really had no idea about.
Right. All right. And the legislators that have been there a while, are these bills that they're already familiar with, or is every legislator kind of having to do a bunch of homework?
A lot of it is homework, but there are some things that tend to crop up year after year or build upon each other through subsequent years. And so that was a difficult thing for me, is here's something that I don't know what preceded it and why it's being here put before us. And even I can't anticipate what the ramifications are going to be in the future.
So how do you research what the bill is about and make your mind up about, you know, how you would stand on it?
They will get a copy of the bill, or in some cases there's something called an RS, which is a routing slip, and that's actually the first thing that comes in front of a committee. And that at that point the committee decides, is this worthy to be printed into an actual bill? So initially the sponsor of the RS will come before a committee and they'll give a very brief overview of what it is, but we do get a copy of it, and that's when we can start to read it. And so you'll get an initial idea of what it's proposing and what it wants to do. A lot of times those will go right through unless there's something really that jumps out at everybody. But as a courtesy, especially if it's another House member, we will generally vote to put that to print. And then a couple days later, it'll come back on the docket, or a week later, depending on what the chairman schedules. And then it'll be an actual bill number. And then we can start to ask the questions of the sponsor. They can bring in people to testify, to fill in the picture of what we're actually voting on. In the meantime, we go through it as best we can, mind you, when there's 50 of these things sometimes, and you're in three different committees. We go through the bill as best we can and try and see what it says, go and investigate what the language means. And that's why your time gets very condensed.
Mm-hmm. What committees do you sit on? Each legislator gets assigned to a number of committees.
Generally, it's three.
Okay.
Sometimes there's only two, but for the most part, everybody has three committees.
Okay.
And they're what are called privileged committees, or your morning committees. And those are generally the more important ones. There's health and welfare. There's state affairs, education. I don't remember all of them right now, but those are the ones where the bigger topics tend to go through that are more important. So I'm on education in the morning. And then my afternoon committees are transportation and business.
And so you have a morning session on education, and then you get a lunch break, and then you're off onto these other two committees?
Well, depending on how long the committees last. It's kind of slow early in the session. A lot of what we do early in the session has to do with just approving rules that have been worked on throughout the year from different agencies or different people proposing a rule for an agency. So when we first get there, it's not new law necessarily, but new statute and rules that will be going in to become law, but that these agencies have to abide to. So those are generally shorter, but we'll say start at 9:00 or 9:30 in education, and our floor session will start at maybe 11:30 early in the session. As it got busier and busier and larger topics came up, we would start at 8:30. I'd be in the education committee till 11:00 sometimes. We'd go right from there to the floor to go vote on things for another couple hours and then get right back into our afternoon committees, which generally start about 1:30. Yeah. So your time frame condenses a lot as you get into the second half of the session. But generally, you might have a small break before or after your morning committee. Then there's the floor session. than your afternoon committee.
And part of what it sounds like is a lot of research, a lot of learning to be informed and know what you're going into.
Right.
And the floor, going on the floor, is really a formal thing. It sounds like a lot of the work is in committees.
It is. A lot of that is done, and that's the way the process is set up. The committee is there to vet these bills to see whether they're worthy, in principle, worthy to go to the floor or not. And a lot of times, if it makes it to the floor, there's very little debate on some things. And if the committee recommends it passes and it comes to the floor with a do pass recommendation from the committee, it'll sail through a lot of the times, unless somebody has done a lot of research or has something specific they know that the committee might not have seen, then they'll stand up and object. And I'm sorry, we do get a lunch break in there. So, yeah.
Okay. So is there much debate that occurs over or in committee or on the floor where the legislators are, you know, putting their, they're maybe on opposing sides of an issue, but they're putting their best arguments forward. And I assume the idea there is the attempt to sway legislators that might be on the fence to vote one way or the other.
Right. Generally in committee, you're asking questions of either the sponsor of the bill or somebody they've brought in to testify. So there's not much debate necessarily in the committee. You may get two opposing sides asking specific questions, and sometimes it can be to get a certain answer, not just for information.
Right.
In the committee.
To make a point. Yeah.
Right. To make a point.
Yeah.
Leading the witness, if you will.
Yeah.
But when it gets to the floor, yes, then there is opportunity to stand up and speak, to bring that perspective, to speak for or against a bill. You can still ask questions of the sponsor at that point. So if you weren't in the committee, I can say, Chris, why is this being brought forward? If you thought about this, and you can answer that. And at that point, I can say to the speaker, everything has to be directed through the speaker of the House. I would say, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to debate in favor of the bill or against the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that opens debate. And then there's kind of two different sections. You can still pop up and ask a question, but generally when it reaches that point, then people will rise and speak in favor or against the bill. Sometimes you get people on a committee defending the sponsor. If the committee said, we want this to pass, and there's a large group of people in the body that are opposing it, then members of that committee, because they know what it entailed, will stand up and debate in favor of it to do that.
And so the first thing a piece of legislation has to do is just survive getting through the committee to be introduced to the full House.
Correct.
Out of the number of bills, let's say, that came into the Education Committee that you sit on, how many don't make it out of the committee to the House?
Very few.
Most of them that get introduced get carried
right.
on
there,
into
there
the
is
House.
Another layer of protection, if you will, or vetting that goes through, because you have to go to the chairman of that committee, present him with your idea and say, will you hear this? That the chairman have a lot of power. And the speaker also, if the speaker doesn't like it, he won't let it go to a committee, or if the chairman doesn't like it. So there were some bills that the chairman said, and the quote is, I'm going to put it in the drawer, or I'm just not going to hear it. If something were to come over from the Senate that the chairman and a House committee didn't like, it goes away. And that happened both ways. The Senate will do the same thing, because we passed some things through the House, went through the committee, went through the floor, went to the Senate, never saw it again.
So if there's something you really want to have get into committee to start being debated and looked at and then written up, you better know how to appeal to the chairperson.
Yes. That's where the politics comes in there and trying to sway them in your direction. And that it doesn't happen. Sometimes they're setting their viewpoint on an issue and they may not want to hear it. That's unfortunate, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we're elected representatives, and the system should allow us as representatives of our constituents to bring forth a bill at the very least to be heard in a print hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And if that committee says this is not worth it, then that's more acceptable than a single chairman
saying, we're not even going to talk about that one.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So one person has the ability to say no.
They do.
Okay.
And there's a couple of those one person along the way.
Yeah.
Because, again, the speaker or the pro tem in the Senate can say, we don't want to hear this. They'll work with the leadership. So the House Majority Leader can say, I don't like this. And the speaker can there make it not work. A lot of stereotypical things are true.
So who is the chairman of the House?
Well, the Speaker of the House is a gentleman named Scott Bedke. He is from Burley, which is almost along the Nevada border, I believe. I believe it's District 27, but he's our speaker.
And so,
did you? There, how many House members are there?
There are 70.
70.
We have 35 districts in Idaho. Each district gets two House members and one Senate.
So, do you have an opportunity to get to know the Speaker very well? If he's not in your committee,
a little bit. Yeah. There's a little separation there. Mm-hmm. If he wants to talk to you, you'll find out. And generally, it's about a specific thing, and you'll bump into him at different events during the time. But excuse me, there's a little authority separation there sometimes, and not that he's not approachable, but he's doing different things than we are for the most part.
It sounds like his job is to be, balanced in his thinking, because North Idaho is so different than Southern Idaho.
Right.
So really understanding the needs and of North Idaho might be part of your job, is to bring that picture to him as best you can.
It definitely is. It's called the state of Ada sometimes because of Ada County.
the sway that Ada County
right.
has.
They have so many representatives.
More people, yes.
Yeah, right. And really, I try and tell them Lewiston's not North Idaho. Coeur d'Alene's barely North Idaho. But to bring our perspective down there is a challenge sometimes, and especially with the water issues, because their issues with water are so different in Southern Idaho than ours are up here. And the adjudication process they went through, you can't use that necessarily as a template and just plop it down in North Idaho, because we are abundant in water resources. And to protect that is totally different than they, who are deficient and have to struggle for the farming industry down there. So that's a good point. Yes, it is something that is our responsibility as representatives from the North.
So you mentioned stereotypes that people have of, the legislative process. One is that there's a lot of arm twisting that goes on when important votes come up. Between some of the power brokers, perhaps, that want to get a certain sort of bill passed. Did you find that happening in your experience?
Yes. I wasn't necessarily on the receiving end of that. There was a talking to at one point about certain things, but as far as this last transportation bill that came through right at the end of session, I think they knew where I stood on that, but there was people that leadership in the House thought that they might sway, that they wouldn't be for it, but if they presented it this way, or unfortunately, I think it might be if you want your bill heard next year, things like that.
Right,
so
right.
I did witness
a tit for tat sort of thing.
Right. You know, you play with us here, we'll help you.
We can make your life nice here if you'll go with us on this one.
Yes,
right?
So unfortunately, it does happen. I am being new, and I am not extremely vocal. I was trying to take it all in and just learn the process, so I wasn't on the receiving end.
I think about, you must have experienced a steep learning curve as a rookie. And did anyone take you under their wing, kind of show you the ropes? So
that happened a little bit. I did have some friends that were already in the legislature, so I leaned on them a lot. Leadership likes to come down and get you under their wing, so they've got the people they want going in the direction that they want. It's maybe not for the most altruistic reasons, but that happens. They try and get to know you, especially that we're so far apart, separated up here in the North. They don't really know me that well. So, that does happen. I had the benefit of knowing some people in the legislature already. And Senator Keogh helped a lot also. I did rely on her a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's been there 20 years.
Right.
She knows the ropes.
Yes.
So we're speaking with Sage Dixon. He's the representative for District 1 here, and covering Bonner and Boundary counties. And we're talking about the legislative session of Idaho Legislature, which just concluded. Sage, one thing I was wondering about, so you're down there. Are you hearing a lot from constituents during the legislative session as bills come up?
We do. A lot of times it's people throughout the state, but there are the ones that are most important, obviously, are the ones that are direct constituents from District 1. And I try and respond to each one of those personally. When you're getting 300 emails in a day about a specific item, there's something in our legislative email that's called an auto reply. So we can say, thank you very much for your interest. I appreciate your concern. And
got your email.
Right. So, those that are not in my district, I tend to put them in that box and off it goes to let them know I received it and thank you. And I'll take their thoughts into consideration. But if it's somebody from our district, I try to reply personally. I'm not very good at emails. I will admit that. And with the amount that we're coming in and the work to do, it was very hard for me to get back to some of them. So I apologize to some people.
Do you have an assistant that helps you with this infrastructure?
No.
Okay.
Well, I only clarify that. I did have an intern come down with me, a young man who helped me on my campaign, who loves politics. He was homeschooled and just graduated, and he had the time to go down there with me. So he came down, and he helped immensely. So I did, and he helped some other legislators. We would have him research things because he's really good at it. So that helped.
Speaking of your constituents contacting you if they know a certain bill is going to be on the floor or being debated in the committees. How would we know what those bills are or what's up, so to speak, on the table? And how would we contact you if someone was interested?
Through the legislative website. If you go to legislator.idaho.gov, that'll tell you everything about the bills. You can search bills by topic. So if you're not sure what the actual bill number is, it'll be there. If you do know the bill number, you can look up that specific bill number, and then it will tell you where that bill is in the process. If it's still in a committee, if it's being heard for the first, second, or third time on the floor, each bill has to be read 3 times on the floor. So if it makes it out of committee, generally the next day it'll get a reading, which is just the title. They don't read the whole bill. It would take too long. They'll read the title. The next day it'll be on the second reading. They'll read it again. Third day, that's when we generally vote on it, when it's on the third reading calendar, unless some procedural event happens and they move it back. So you can go to that website and it'll tell you where these bills are.
And that website again is?
It's legislature.idaho.gov.
Okay. And it is quite a resource, actually. I mean, 10 or 15 years ago, we didn't have anything similar to that, where you could see the exact language of every bill that's being considered in the legislature.
Right. You can look it up. The PDF will come up of the exact language, the changes that will be made. If it's just a change in an existing law, it's underlined. So it makes it very easy to see what's being proposed if it's not something brand new.
It is a little difficult to put it into context, though, because
it is.
You know, the language of the bill is very formal often.
And how big is the writing of a bill? I mean, are we talking 50 pages on that PDF?
No.
Okay.
Sometimes there were some that were more of what they term housekeeping bills, that it's cleaning up some statute or regulation to be in line with something else existing. Those can be large if it's a Uniform Code Act. But generally, at the most, it's 4 pages.
Okay. So
some get up to 30, but that's rare. I think I only saw one that was that big.
So during the 3-day reading process on the floor, you would be going home and reading that. And if you had questions, you'd ask. I'm wondering how important or helpful it is to you to hear from your constituents if something is being debated in committee. How important is it to you to know what people are feeling or thinking?
It's important to me. Mm-hmm. I have my perspective and my principles that I presented when I ran for the office. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming most people know that. But still, there's things I can miss and things that may affect somebody differently. And so I want to hear that. And that may or may not sway my opinion. But at the same point, it's giving me a fuller picture of what our district wants and what the people I'm representing want. So it is important to me. I like to hear from it. I try and be just in my decisions and not just one-sided and make sure I have a full picture before I head off in a direction. And I can be reached. I'm sorry you asked me this. It's S. Dixon, which is D-I-X-O-N, at house.idaho.gov. That's my legislative email. And there's also Sage at sagedixon.com.
Great. Thank you so much for that. And so let's get to some of the things you worked on this session.
Actually, I have another question for you here before we dive into some of the issues. So this one, this legislative session was actually one of the longest in history of the state. I think it was the fifth longest.
I think so, yes.
And that was because you were dealing with some big issues, specifically with education and transportation, as I understand. But it looks like you may also be going into a special session.
Potentially, yeah.
because the governor made remarks last week that he feels like the session was incomplete.
Right.
There's a specific piece of legislation that came up the last night.
It was, yes.
It was a bill having to do with Idaho's child support enforcement system. And it sounded like it sailed through the Senate as kind of a housekeeping piece to bring Idaho in to conform with some new legislation or some new rules having to do with child support enforcement. But then it hit a House committee, and you're not on that committee,
no.
I don't think. What committee did that come
from? That went through Judiciary and Rules.
Okay.
Right.
An 8-9 vote, I think, the committee decided to disallow the bill.
Mm-hmm. They tabled it.
They tabled it. Yeah, okay.
Right.
And so now there's a from what the media is reporting, there is a potential that the state's going to lose a lot of money to help collect child support payments. So is you think that's likely to happen, that the legislature is going to be called back into session to deal with this?
I think so.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything yet, but I think so. I don't think there's anything the governor can do through the executive branch to do it. I think it would have to be legislatively.
So, and where do you stand on this particular issue?
I'm trying to get all the information on it. I would have voted against it, I think, for a lot of the same reasons that those committee members did. And it was brought up to me about a week or so before they started hearing it in the committee. The reason it took so long, or one of the reasons, is towards the end of the session, the House wants to pass all of its bills to make sure they get transferred to the Senate. The Senate wants to pass all of its bills to get over to the House.
So we're rush on bills.
Right. Yeah. So here our docket is, and we've got 10 House bills to vote on, and there's Senate bills coming in. We move the Senate ones to the bottom of the docket, and they may stay there for a few days as we're trying to get these House bills done. So the Senate passed this maybe a month, I'm not sure exactly on the timing, say a month before they heard it in committee in the House, and those things are held sometimes for that reason. I think the fear of being under international law is a large one. But the one thing also, because it was a rushed process, I don't think they were able to get all the information that might have caused them to think a little differently. That's still something that I wouldn't be for, being under the Hague, as far as our governing body goes in an international treaty. But the ramifications of voting no on that, and the way it's extending out, and the fact that we do have to have a relationship with other nations to collect this child support, and especially other states, is something that needs to be looked at. And my hope would be that Idaho can do that without that treaty. And we do have to do something through the federal government, because it crosses state lines as well. So the danger, I think, is we were not danger, but the problem is we were so wrapped up into a federal system that when the federal government says, well, if you don't do this, we're going to take this away, and that harms us. And I think a little bit of this brunt of blame can be pointed at them, because they keep escalating what we're going to lose. The federal government, if you don't do this, you'll lose that. Well, now you're going to lose this.
So my understanding is there's about $16 million in enforcement funds that the state would lose, but also would lose access to the federal enforcement system that helps collect a couple hundred million dollars a year in child support payments. It doesn't mean they would stop coming to the children. I'm sure a lot of the parents would continue to make those payments, but some might slack off. And so the ultimate harm would be to the children.
Right.
And so that's what you would have to weigh against the principle that we're falling under some international rules here that affect these payments.
Right. I certainly wouldn't want, I'm not weighing harming the children. That should be a priority, to continue that money to come into the families, but looking for a different way to do it that I think we could do. But all that information's not there as far as the cost of that would go and how that would affect us. I don't know why we're receiving federal funds to do this system. And that's when you start looking at taking away federal funds, a lot of the agencies get very upset. And they tend to start bringing up worst case scenarios when they're going to be losing that funding. I don't know if that's the cost of what it to administer this program, if that $16 million is, or if that's extra funding that comes in. But those are things that committee wasn't aware of. While they were looking at this bill and being pushed to get it done because the session was close. And when the Department of Health and Welfare person was answering questions, she was a little disingenuous and vague about things, and that increased their nervousness, I think. That's my perspective, mind you, not being on the committee.
So that was one of my questions. It sounds like that federal funding was kind of bedded into the bill or hidden in the bill.
Right.
And this extra session would be give it more time to be looked at. So if you have something like that bedded into a bill, how easy is it to change it around or make it work for what our legislatures would pass?
I think if it was just an Idaho bill, it wouldn't be that difficult. You take it to what's called the Legislative Services Office, and they do the writing. If I had an idea for a bill, I'd go to them, and they would do the writing of the bill, see what codes it matches up with to make sure everything was okay, that something wouldn't be affected that shouldn't be affected. And then they'd bring me a draft, and I could approve it or whatnot. So this, though, being under our treaty or being a way to ratify that treaty, because our Senate didn't ratify that treaty, meaning the U.S. Senate, so they need the states to ratify it, I think that would be more difficult. And my hope, again, would be if we do have this special session, that we can find a way to keep the program intact so that we're helping those families get the money that they need without being under – our law can be superseded by international law in this treaty. That's the way I read it, and that's what made me uncomfortable about it. And I think a lot of those other legislators did as well. And they had far more time than I did to go in-depth in this, and were asking questions for 2 days. It was
So when you say our law, what specific part of the law would be superseded?
Well, if they change, if something in The Hague comes and decides that they want to make this law different, and then it goes over our law because we've accepted this treaty, we've agreed to be part of that treaty, so that anything that they put into statute or law over there could supersede ours. We couldn't say that's not the way we do it in Idaho. They say, well, you agreed to do what we say, essentially, to
but as
simplify
it relates to
it.
A child enforcement, a child support payment. So there might be one of their citizens in Idaho that's failing to make a child support payment to a custodial parent in their country. Mm-hmm. And their laws would apply to how that is collected here?
Yes. And we wouldn't be able to look at that either. We have to accept that. But that's not even what I'm talking about. It wasn't specifically just child support. It was in general, in a sense, the way I read it. And again, not having the time to get all that information, that's a critical question for me. Is it just dealing with these child support issues? But something else was that if they are trying to impose something that we may not agree with over here, we have to accept it. If they're coming after somebody in America or Idaho by an international law or a different country's mm-hmm. law, we may be opposed to that, mm-hmm. but we would have to accept it in this case.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very good. This is like a government 101 course here. I think next time we have you or one of our legislators or senators in the studio, we should contact the high school and see if they can't listen in. This is 88.5.
They can catch the podcast.
Right. Yes. This is 88.5 KRFY, and this is The Morning Show, and we have a guest in the studio, our very own Sage Dixon, State Representative District 1B in the state of Idaho. Mm-hmm. We'll continue our discussion. This could go on.
Okay. I thought you were gearing up for a musical break there.
I think, well, do you want one?
Well, do you need a break, Sage?
Sure, I'd like to get a glass of water.
Okay, so we will take a musical break. This is Steve Forbear, Good Planets Are Hard to Find, and the reason we're playing that is tomorrow is a special day. It's the 45th anniversary of Earth Day, and this is Steve Forbear, Good Planets Are Hard to Find. And that was Steve Forbear, Good Planets Are Hard to Find, in honor of tomorrow's Earth Day. And we're here in the studios with Sage Dixon, our representative in House District 1B, State of Idaho.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here, Sage.
Thank you.
Yeah, Sage. So let's dive into some of the issues that you worked on this year in the legislature. One of them was education. The legislature actually made a pretty good substantial increase in funding for education this year, a total of 7.4%, which was what the governor had recommended, I
Correct.
Believe.
Yes.
How did that fare in the legislature? I assume there are people that were asking for more. Some were probably advocating less.
Yes. There's always a cry for more.
So how did the discussion settle out on how to fund education this year?
Well, a lot of that goes through the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee. They're the ones that really set the budget. But the one thing they were waiting on was the career ladder, the teacher's career ladder, which was new legislation. And that is what came through the Ed Committee in the House and the Senate. So that was – I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that actually sets a fairly fast pace, I'd say, in increasing teacher salaries.
Right, yeah. Right. It bumps up the beginning salary, and it gives them a larger path towards a much higher end salary when they go through the ladder, what used to be called steps and lanes, and it was a different way of figuring out their experience and educational level and going up. And this changes that a little bit and increases that pay for mm-hmm. them.
And how did you feel about the final resolution of the education funding?
There's some things I don't like in there, but being a part of that committee and working with it, I think we did a good job with that bill. In its original conception, there was a lot of people that were unhappy with it. And it started in the House committee, was generally driven by the governor and his task force on education. And when it first came to us, we had a large hearing over on the Senate side. There's a larger hearing room there, and it took a lot of public testimony. A lot of teachers were upset with what was being proposed and the oversight and how it would have worked. And there were some things in the bill itself that the committee didn't like either. So there was a group of us that went to our chairman and said, this really isn't going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. There's good parts to this process, too, with the chairman. Mm-hmm. And this is what we'd like to see. And we were able to work with the new superintendent, Ibarra, and get her perspective and use her push also to have some changes made in that bill that were more pleasing, I think, to everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, actually, they had a couple stories on or during the course of the session was an eighth grader proposed that the Idaho giant salamander be officially named the state amphibian.
Yes.
And at first that got turned down, but then the legislature turned around and said, okay.
Right.
And did that come through your committee?
No, that went through state affairs.
Okay.
State affairs is kind of a catch-all. And a lot of the hot topic items go through state affairs. Okay. They were pretty busy this year, busier than I was on education.
But it sounded like the legislators caught a little bit of grief because they turned that one down and then they decided to go ahead and make a state amphibian.
Right, they did. I'm not sure what drove that reconsideration, but yeah. Something neat that happened is when it came to the floor and I went ahead and voted for it, I received a lot of emails from students at Farmingstead-Wells School. They were watching. They were very interested in whether this salamander was going to be the state amphibian. And I didn't see the emails before the vote. Some came in before encouraging me to vote yes. But after I did, they contacted me and said thank you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really neat.
That's cool. It'd be involving the young people
right,
in, the,
absolutely.
In the process.
Do salamanders live in Idaho?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Down
south
more?
Yes. And this thing can grow up to a foot long.
Oh, okay.
And it's, there's one legislator that didn't like it a bit because he'd been swimming and encountered one. So he wasn't excited about that.
Yeah. Well, personal opinion.
Yes.
A big salamander like that deserves to be the state amphibian.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a harmless bill.
You're also on the Transportation Committee in the House, and that was a hot topic
right.
this year because we have a lot of infrastructure needs in the state for transportation. And I believe the recommendation was to they've identified a $262 million shortfall for our transportation needs. The legislature passed a 7 cent a gallon gas tax increase to start bringing some money in to address these things. And the total is a $95 million revenue enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about that and where you stood on that as well.
There was many different iterations that came through. There was, I think, three bills. Well, there was a lot that were coming through the Transportation Committee of different ways to attack this problem to try and get enough money. We had a lot of meetings as a Republican caucus of what is the amount we really think that's necessary. But ITD says something, but sometimes, you know, we might think something different. Or what do we think is a reasonable amount to apply to it that we can do within our budget without raising taxes? Many of us didn't want to raise taxes at all. Some thought that was the only way to do it. So there was different points of attack as far as raising registration fees, trying to take some money from general funds, general fuels tax. There's something called a transfer fee that goes on to shipping of fuels in bulk and raising that rate. Lot of conversation in that. There was, I think it was 311, as we spoke of before, that was a package that I agreed with. It did raise the fuels tax, the gas tax. I wasn't for that. But combined with that was removing of the sales tax on groceries, which I think is very important and something we should do. And then also in that was a flattening of the top tiers of the income tax. It would leave the lower portion alone, but it would flatten the top part. So some of the higher levels of income tax would come down. Now, 7.4 was our highest rate, or is, and it would have dropped it down to about 6.7. So the long-range goal there is trying to have a flat income tax, but nobody was anxious to harm the less fortunate, if you will, and bring their rate up, those that were at the bottom. So we were going to leave that alone. I thought that was a good package because overall, it would lower the tax burden. There's a very slim chance in there that some people in what we might term the middle class might see a little bit of increase over a year. But with the removal of the grocery tax and the increase in the fuels tax, that would help. There'd be little offset, some positive, a little bit of negative. That is something that I voted for, even though there was an increase in the fuels tax. We passed that through the House. The Senate decided not to hear it. It went through a Senate committee. but they didn't think they had the votes on the floor to really pass it, so they just kind of brushed it aside, and we continued to work, we being different bodies of people within the legislature, on different packages. There was something I liked that would take a percentage of our increase. It was what we were terming a one-year sacrifice. So this year we had roughly $140 million surplus or increase over last year's revenues. We would take next year with projected increase again and take that money and put it directly into transportation. And so there would be a large bulk of money that they could work with and really decrease their need. And then in subsequent years, you'd take that same amount, but you'd still have anticipated growth that could then be plugged into other agencies and used for other things. But to address this problem immediately, this was the proposal.
The problem being that you refer to being infrastructure.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Correct. The maintenance needs. A lot of that 262 is purely maintenance. And, and a lot of the road and bridge, well, the bridge issues are a really big one. And then some of the roads as well. I liked that. I thought that was prudent use of funding. Every other budget would remain stable for 1 year, and this bulk of money would go directly to transportation. And a suggestion that I made in that is that we earmark it essentially for specific projects, so we know exactly what it's going to. It's not just going into the a big fund.
It sounds like each bill is very complex. One of the things I'm reading right here is that the lowest earning 20% of the Idahoans, which is income of $21,000 or less, would actually see an increase of $68 a year, where groups making over $93,000 a year would see overall tax increase, while people making more would see, or making less than 96 would see a tax increase, while people making more would see a tax cuts. Is there a reason for that? Because if you're making $21,000 or less and you get a tax increase, that's, is this accurate?
Was that 311 that you were talking about?
Tax bill, House Bill 311. This is from the Spokesman Review.
Okay. I was, there's a lot of different statistics you can pull up, and things that I saw weren't, the middle, the people in the middle, again, I believe I said, had a, would see a small increase in that.
And, I think it's $192 a year, actually.
And it's easy to say small, but it's nothing that we would want. But I viewed that, though, as addressing the transportation problem and then trying to remain harmless on the people at the bottom by removing that grocery tax as well.
Okay.
Because those are two of the things that most of the money is spent on.
That
for
would
lower
make up
income
the difference
people.
Is what you're saying.
Right. So if they're paying more for fuel, hopefully that grocery tax would help offset that.
So when does the grocery tax go away?
It doesn't. This is no. We didn't pass that bill. That's the one in the Senate that went away. The one you mentioned before, the 7% increase, starts January 1, and included in that is a $21 increase in registration fees across the board. It's not scaled the way that it's scaled. Newer cars pay a higher registration fee than older cars, but it's a $21, I'm sorry if I said percent, a $21 increase on that, and that all takes effect July 1. So that'll directly impact everybody.
Everybody that drives.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, yes, I'm sorry. Everybody that drives.
And why a decrease in the higher earners, the over $93,000 a year?
There's
getting
a lot of
tax cut.
Conjecture about why. And there may be certain people within the body that would benefit more. I think the goal is to get a flat tax. And a lot of times we look at other states that are being a little more successful perhaps with than what we're doing. And Utah, given our demographic in southern Idaho, Utah is generally looked at as a model. And they have a flat tax of 5.4 at this point. So a lot of...
It's a completely flat tax?
For your income.
Every resident pays this 5.4%.
That's my understanding. Okay. I haven't investigated that fully, but that's the talk that I heard. So we were trying to get to something similar. But to immediately go in that direction would harm a lot of people on the bottom end, people that are in our district up here that I know. That's not something I would promote. I don't want to harm them. At some point, if that's the direction we're going, it has to increase up. We can't hold everything down at 1.6, that we wouldn't have the revenue that we would need. So that was part of the argument, was to start at the top, but unfortunately it just benefits those at the top. Now our top rate isn't really high. We've got a really low threshold for getting to that 7.4%. So it does grab a bulk of people, but those that are very wealthy, it would benefit them. That's a big difference when you're talking lots of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a, you know, statistically, that's a smaller number of,
right.
of citizens as right. well that are in that top bracket. Other things you dealt with this year, one of them that was kind of a hot topic up here, although I don't know that it related to Bonner and Boundary County so much, was, had to do with gambling and the both houses passed legislation to repeal a law that led to the slot machine-like instant racing machines that are at three locations around the
Correct.
State.
Yes.
Did that come, did you, you, I assume you got a vote on that, at least on the House floor?
Correct. Yeah, that was through state affairs. That's another one of those big issues that went through that body. And they heard 3 or 4 days of testimony. It might have been a whole week of testimony. Yeah. The governor vetoed it, but then there's a little bit of discussion on whether he vetoed it in the correct amount of time.
That's right. and he might have vetoed it a day too late.
Right.
So the legislation would then stand.
It would. And I really don't know where that's at right now. The Senate went through the process of seeing if they could override the veto, and they didn't have the votes to do that. So I think essentially the veto will stand at this point. It gives mainly the legislation was driven by the tribes because they see it as a threat.
As a competition
right,
for the,
exactly,
the tribal run.
To what they've done. And they thought their process was more pure in getting their ability to have those machines and casino games than what the horse tracks had, or the, in this case, Post Falls had the Greyhound track. So I think there's a window open for them to litigate, perhaps, in this case. But that's the extent of my knowledge on it right now.
I'd like to remind our listeners that they're listening, you out there on, in radio land, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, The Morning Show with, I'm Chris, and my co-host is Susie, and today we're speaking with Sage Dixon, our District 1 House Representative.
Kind of given us an inside scoop into some of the details of the House bills that came up, were debated, passed some of them. Right. And my next question is, what's coming up? What's on the, and when do you come, go back to in session?
Well, we'll be back next January at the latest. If the governor calls a special session for what we were speaking earlier, it could be, I don't know when. I think the window that the federal government gave us on removing those funds was 60 days. So we could be back within the next 45 days.
That's on the child support
Right, the Senate Bill 1067 about child support and the international treaty. Other than that, we would go back in December for an organizational session, which just gets us ready. I don't even, to be honest, we may not even do that because there were so many new people coming in this year that we needed to organize and pick out our desks and offices, but all that is set now. So being a freshman, I don't know here, we may not have to do that. But then by the second week in January, we'll start the 2016 legislative session.
So in between now and when the next legislature kicks into gear, January, what kind of work do you do to reach out to constituents and backgrounding on potential legislation that might be coming up?
Right. Well, there's a lot of things that come up during the course of the session that you'd like to work on. The ideas will spark when you're dealing with other things. So there's things I'll be looking at, trying to write them. The Legislative Services Office is still in action, so I can give them a call or send an email. Here's something I'm looking at, and they can write that up. I'm still receiving a lot of email and a lot of regular mail of issues that people have. They're, I think Union Pacific is thinking of building a new track up in Boundary County, and there's some people that live up there that aren't happy about it. They think they've been cut out of the process, so they're asking me, what can I do to help them? And so always dealing with constituents, trying to get out and meet people, talk to businesses, talk to whomever to see how I did, if they were paying attention or what they'd like to see the state do so that I can try and address it next year.
So you're not sitting around twiddling your thumbs?
No.
Okay.
and you have a day job.
I do have a day job, yes. So that makes it a little harder.
And what do you do, Sage?
I'm an electrician. I have a contracting business. So I'm back in boots and jeans every day.
I'm sure your family's happy to have you home.
Yes, they are. And I'm happy to be home.
You have 7 children.
That's correct. We have 4 at home still.
Oh, okay.
3 are in college.
All right. In Idaho?
2 in Idaho. 1 is at New York Medical College. He's in his 3rd year now.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
So this is 88.5 KRFY and The Morning Show. We really appreciate your coming in, giving us that, like I said, inside scoop into the process. I think this discussion could go on. It's really nice to have someone come in and share with us as a freshman legislator.
But keep that in mind. I'm just a freshman.
I know. I wanted to call you a rookie, but freshman is probably the correct word.
Rookie's fine.
I know, baseball season, right?
Right.
And we really appreciate it. We hope you come back
and
visit us and keep us informed from your perspective and point of view.
And I do want to mention to our listeners that we are going to have Senator Keough in. We've also reached out to our other House Representative, Heather Scott, and that one's a little more up in the air. I'm not sure if she'll make it, but hopefully in the next week or two, we'll be able to let you know when we'll be talking with Senator Keough.
It sounds like it's going to be a special Wednesday show, possibly.
Yeah, given her schedule needs it, we're probably talking about next Wednesday, so we might have an extra morning show next week.
So heads up on that. You want to hear from our other legislator.
Right.
This is... Also, next week, our guests will be on Tuesday, Carrie Logan, our mayor, get a little mayor talk in and see what's going on in the city. And this Thursday, April 23rd, you can join Jim and Jack at 8 a.m. for the morning show. Their guest this week is Debbie Love, executive director of the Ponderay Arts Council. That's at 8 o'clock. And tune in tonight at 8 o'clock p.m. for Between the Notes, actually, my show, talking with live interviews, and original music from songwriters as they share ideas, insights, and their personal songwriting journey. And this week, my guest is Justin Landtrip. So that's at 8 o'clock tonight. It's always fun.
And Justin is a really great singer-songwriter.
I can't wait to have him in.
Yeah. He's doing great stuff.
Yep, I love his music. So tune in at 8 tonight for Between the Notes. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know more of what's going on in our great community here in North Idaho, you can go to Sandpoint Online. You can also go to KRFY.org for the events calendars. And also, you want to hear this interview again or tell your friends about it. They'll have a inside knowledge of what has happened in this legislative session. Pardon?
Nothing.
Oh, we're podcasting it on KRFY.org. Thanks to Keoki and Sandpoint Online for helping us with that.
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to say, Chris? You're just smiling at me. I don't know what's going on.
I'll tell you later.
Okay. And tomorrow is Earth Day. I don't know if anyone knows the history of Earth Day.
Well, what's the history of Earth Day? It's been around 45 years now, right?
45 years. Yeah. It started in 1970. It's an event to increase public awareness of the world's environmental issues, I'll call it, and celebrated in the United States for the first time. Millions of Americans, including students from thousands of colleges and universities, participated in the original 1970 Earth Day. It was the brainchild of Senator Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin. He's a staunch environmentalist back in 1970 who hoped to provide unity to the grassroots environmental movement and increase ecological awareness. So this week, that's tomorrow. There's several things going on in our community for Earth Day. Tomorrow night is a movie at the Rude Girls Room at the library, and that is being put on by the Sandpoint Vegetarians. It's called Cowspiracy, a documentary that covers the high cost and environmental damage associated with industrial agriculture and the meat industry. The movie will be shown at 6 p.m. again at the Rude Girls Room at the Sandpoint Library. That's one of the events going on for Earth Day. And I know that this Saturday at 10 a.m. they're having a pulling of the rushes to help our beach stay pollutant-free, so they don't have to spray the weeds. Everyone's going to go out there and pull the weeds. And that's at 10 o'clock on Saturday, and also Sand Creek cleanup at the same time down at City Beach. What do you've got going on there, Chris?
Well, there's, as usual, there's more going on than we could possibly relate here in the next few minutes, Susie. But one of the neat events this weekend is the International Fly Fishing Film Festival. It's going to be held at the Panada Theater on Saturday. It's sponsored by the North 40 Fly Shop, and it's just a festival of short and longer films on fly fishing. It's not really instructional. It's about the pleasures of the sport, and that starts at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6 p.m.
And if you want to see some Shakespeare, specifically A Midsummer Night's Dream. That's Thursday evening at the Panada, the Sandpoint Waldorf School of 8th grade students. It's a typical thing that they perform a Shakespearean play in their 8th grade. And that starts at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6, the Panada Theater on Thursday evening.
And circling back to probably the biggest event of the week is the K&K Spring Fishing Derby kicking off on Saturday. And that's I don't have the number of years they've been doing the K&K Derby, but I'm sure it's upwards of half a century.
You know, even if you don't fish, it's a fun thing going on in our community, and we can all celebrate because we love our lake.
Yeah, and actually the fishery has really been improving with some of the fisheries work they've done, which was controversial at the outset, is proving to have worked, actually. We're seeing a lot of recovery in some of the major species we have in the lake.
A lot going on. We really appreciate everyone tuning in this morning for the KRFY Morning Show. Thank you very much. And we're going to leave you with, because it is Earth Day, this is Willie Nelson. Actually, just a minute. It's not Willie Nelson. I've got to fix something here. Say something, Chris. Okay. Now it's Willie Nelson.
There we go.
A wonderful world. And we hope you have a beautiful day. We'll be here next week with Mayor Carrie Logan.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye, Chris.